we experience physical pain, we will often seek the assistance of the medical profession, and rightly so. Ministers are not generally the experts in such matters and should not claim to be so. Furthermore, while the practice of spiritual healing is not entirely unknown in Unitarian churches, you won't find Unitarian ministers promising cures for cancer in exchange for large contributions to the collection plate, and for that we should all be thankful. On the subject of physical pain, however, it's perhaps worth mentioning that I trained in hypnotherapy before I started my ministry training, though I've never practiced. But it's easily shown that hypnotherapy can have dramatic effects to release physical pain. If you want to watch, for example, a clip from the One Show on YouTube where BBC journalist Michael Mosley is hypnotised by Stuart Derbyshire from Birmingham University and then subjected to an extreme heat on his arm and then has a needle driven into his hand but experiences no unpleasant sensations. The academic then shows brain scans which demonstrate how the pain is processed entirely differently when the person is under hypnosis compared with normal consciousness. Now, a further stage is that patients can then be taught through hypnosis to dissociate from pain in their daily lives to gain some measure of relief. But what of emotional pain? This is something ministers of religion ought to be more qualified to speak about if we are worth our salt. Well, as a Unitarian minister, I have to come to my own conclusions on this tough subject. It is not required of me that I look to tradition for answers, except insofar as it makes sense to do so. A person many people have turned to for understanding of emotional pain in recent years is the spiritual writer and teacher Eckhart Tolle. And this has been true of me too. First, a quick anecdote. So, as some of you know, in January this year, I found myself on a Sunday morning, along with 16 other Unitarians, in the far north of Scotland, doing chants and dances with members of the Findhorn community in their main communal space, which is called the Universal Hall. And if you want to know more about that, my experiences of that week, I've discussed it a little bit in some services here, but you'd have to ask me afterwards, I guess. But one thing that was interesting was that I recognised the hall space, and for a moment I couldn't think why, but then I realised I'd watched on YouTube some talk that the international spiritual teacher Eckhart Tolle had given, which was from this venue. It's very characteristic and easily recognisable. Eckhart Tolle's meteoric rise is hard to explain. Someone who lived for a time mostly on London park benches is now one of the world's most sought-after spiritual teachers, with his simple message of the need to be present to our experience, to be present to our life, and to beware of being too wrapped up in our thoughts and emotions. The reaction to Tolle's influence has been interesting. Spiritual writer William Bloom has commented that Tolle is offering a very contemporary synthesis of Eastern spiritual teaching, which is normally so clothed in arcane language that it is incomprehensible. Among Christian theologians, the reception has been very mixed, as we would expect. Evangelical Christian theologian John Stackhouse has said that Tolle, quote, gives a certain segment of the population exactly what they want, a sort of supreme religion that purports to draw from all sorts of lesser, that is, established religions. However, if Stackhouse is correct, and I'm not sure it's a very fair summation anyway, this is unlikely to count against Tolle in Unitarian circles. We Unitarians, after all, are very doubtful that spiritual truth is restricted to any one tradition. A key and, I think, helpful concept that Eckhart Tolle has developed is the notion of the pain body. He defines this in the following way, quote, "The accumulation of old emotional pain that almost all people carry in their energy field, I see it as a semi-autonomous psychic entity. It consists of negative emotions that were not faced, accepted, and then let go in the moment they arose. Now, if the idea that we have an energy field is controversial, I think considering the possibility that we possess a pain body is maybe less so. At the very least, it may be a valuable metaphor about our inner life as human beings. To be clear, some kinds of emotional pain we shouldn't attempt to wish away. The grieving process, for example, is a natural human process with its own natural stages. Suppression of grief is unhealthy. We need to be able to face our feelings. Accordingly, when Toller speaks of a pain body, he is not primarily talking about a healthy grieving process, for example. He is speaking of negative emotions that are mishandled at the point they arise in us, and which then, in a certain sense, take on a kind of subterranean life of their own within our psyches, shaping and distorting who we think we ultimately are. Toller is not being negative about emotions, per se, either. He is not calling on human beings to be without feeling. Neither is he saying that human beings should not think. That would be absurd. In his book, A New Earth, Toller says, thinking and emotion turn into ego only when you identify with them and they take you over completely. That is to say, when they become I. In fact, Toller stresses that positive emotions are, well, positive, but he makes a distinction. He says, quote, we need to differentiate between positive emotions that are ego-generated and deeper emotions that emanate from our natural state of connectedness with being. Positive emotions generated by the ego already contain within themselves their opposite, into which they can quickly turn. What the ego calls love is possessiveness and addictive clinging. Anticipation about an upcoming event, which is the ego's overvaluation of future, easily turns into its opposite, let down and disappointment. Praise and recognition make you feel alive and happy one day. Being criticised or ignored make you dejected and unhappy the next. What should we do? For Toller, it is what he calls presence and what others sometimes call mindfulness, which gradually dissolves the pain body and so disarms its power over us. So he says, quote, it is your conscious presence that breaks the link with the pain body. When you don't identify with it, the pain body can no longer control your thinking and so cannot renew itself anymore by feeding on your thoughts. Speaking from my own experience, I'm aware I identify with my thoughts much less than when I was younger. Although I get down sometimes, as many people do, I'm much more inclined these days to treat thoughts and feelings that come into my mind as just that, thoughts and feelings. And there are many practices out there from the world of both spirituality and psychology to help us get our thoughts and feelings in proportion, to rediscover a deeper and truer self, and to embrace life more fully for what it is, a present reality, always remarkable and surprising once we learn to pay attention. The pain of which Joanna Macy speaks in our other reading is of a more specific kind. I can hardly believe that the dialogue here is from a book published in 1989. It sounds so absolutely contemporary and up to date. Macy's subject is a kind of unspoken collective pain about certain trends that we witness, most especially in relation to the ongoing destruction of our environment. Speaking way back when, Macy asserts that anxiety about the future is more universal than we might think. We might imagine that our emotional pain about world affairs is personal, yet it is widely shared, and to a great extent, though people find ways to deny it and suppress their own engagement. Though we may fear burnout, Macy points out that to close off to the pain we feel is a form of death. And I think we can wander around in that semi-dead state for years and years if we're not careful, denying what is plainly true. Macy says, I believe the greatest danger we face is our denial, thinking that we can't look at the dangers. And Macy speaks of breathing, finding ways to breathe that help us develop our compassion. She points out quite rightly that compassion at root means suffering with. This suffering with is not about becoming miserable or disempowered. It is about living more fully and deeply, connecting with our true self in its radiance and power, while also connecting with others. Once again, we're exploring here the development of the practice of presence or mindfulness. Macy is not only speaking here of a coping mechanism. She sees mindful breathing as expanding our problem-solving capabilities, which is also a route through our personal pain too. It's not about feeling we have to have the quick fix as soon as the problem is presented to us. Quite the opposite. Instead, she says, we tend to feel that we cannot take in any grief or problem unless we have the answer to it. That's backwards. We have to expose ourselves to a situation, stand naked before it, so to speak, before an appropriate response to the problem can arise. Breathing in this way helps us. I think one of the most heartening developments at Framlingham Meeting House since the beginning of the ministry here has been our regular mindfulness group. And we may associate mindfulness primarily with the Buddhist tradition, but Buddhist practitioners such as Thich Nhat Hanh have said how encouraged they are when Christians take up the practice of mindfulness without feeling any need to abandon their existing faith. In fact, there is more in the Christian tradition by way of traditions of prayer that encourage our own awakening and liberation through and beyond pain than we may be aware of. For Christian writer Matthew Fox, his stages of creation-centered spirituality include what he calls the via negativa, the negative way. Like Eckhart Tolle, Fox sees in emotional pain a kind of fuel that can be transformed into new life. Fox quotes the medieval German woman mystic Mechthild of Magdeburg, who wrote, "When I can no longer bear my loneliness, I take it to my friends, for I must share it with all the friends of God. Do you suffer? So do I." Fox comments, liberation begins at the point where pain is acknowledged and allowed to be pain. From there, pain becomes shareable and, where possible, resolvable. So I don't interpret this as being about trying to make our friends miserable. Fox offers this clarification. In this entire reflection on letting pain be pain, I must emphasise how important it is that we not glorify pain or cling to our pain or wallow in our pain. That is not letting pain be pain. That way lies letting pain be our boss. The purpose of letting pain be pain is precisely this, to let go of pain. So like Eckhart Tolle, Matthew Fox is inviting us on a journey of transformation, a journey we should not travel alone. And what is surely interesting about all this is that it takes us back to the current popular assertion of private spirituality being preferable to religion. Well, Joanna Macy seems to be saying that privatised spirituality is not the answer for our contemporary age. In challenging this global pain, maybe more in evidence in the Western world in the last 9 months than at any time since 9/11, we might wish to reflect on Joanna Macy's words where she says, I prefer to work in groups. We need each other in this. It is my hope that Unitarian communities may be safe spaces where people can bring their emotional pain with the hope and intention of gaining liberation in due time, being free for transformation and loving this world as long as we each shall live. Ultimately, I see this as a path of joy. Amen.